Also like us on facebook.com/stage N studio or tweet me at @stage N studio. We're going to go out with more Kate Bush. Till next time, I'm Dee Mae Roberts.
Thank you to all of our new and renewing members during our winter membership drive. That makes KBOO one of the best community radio stations in the country. Thank you once again for being the best supporters a station could ever ask for.
Hello, I'm Tave Fache-Drake, and the time is 11:29, and we are just getting ready for a real treat here. Andre Middleton with Art Focus is going to speak with Beresford Booth from the Portland Art Museum about the current exhibition, Constructing Identity. And Art Focus is brought to you by this program. Art Focus, this program of Art Focus, is going to be brought to you in part by KBOO Foundation members, but also a grant from Portland 5, presenting an evening with classical guitar quintet Los Romeros, a multi-generational family performing since 1958. Los Romeros performs Friday, March 10th, at the Arlene Schnitzer Concert Hall. Tickets and information for this and all ages event are available at Portland5.com. And also Portland Saturday Market. From our hands to yours, celebrating 44 years of American arts and crafts. Freshly prepared foods with an international flavor and a local music every Saturday and Sunday from March through Christmas Eve in Waterfront Park. Local artisans, international food, live music, PortlandSaturdayMarket.com. And here comes Art Focus.
Thank you, Beresford Booth, for joining us today at KBOO's Art Focus Radio. We're here at the Portland Art Museum, where there is a curated collection of work that you think represents the notion of constructing identity.
Well, first of all, thank you. It's great to be with you, and I'm excited to have the opportunity to speak to the community, because fundamentally, the prime objective of this exhibition, when I met with the director, was to break the museum's past history of not, paraphrasing Brian here, but not really spending as much time and giving as much attention to communities of color. And I think part of his initiative going forward, I'm sure part of his initiative going forward, is to extend the notion of community for this institution and widen its scope. He recognizes that there's been a bit of a deficiency, and I'm proud to work with someone who sees it, acknowledges it, and says, how do we begin to do that? So putting this exhibition together, Constructing Identity, from Go, specifically had to do with tailoring it to not just invite the individuals to come and see the Bertucci Foundation collection of art, the individuals in the community, but to try to create something that was more than an act of contrition, but the beginning of a series of exhibitions that acknowledges, welcomes, and embraces the community of color in Portland.
Thank you. That brings up a great point in the thought of how we define ourselves through the lens of our culture. Mm-hmm. And I think it's fair to say that there's been a definite thread throughout, from the Renaissance to the neocolonial, that, you know, European men have defined what the beauty standard is.
Well, they're behind all the standards.
All the standards, exactly. And I think it's incredible to see this collection of work that seeks to not only look for some level of acceptance within that standard, but push the boundaries so that we can redefine and reclaim our own standards of beauty.
I like the second part of what you said for more, actually, because that's more accurate. And I think, yes, there's no shortage of literature. There's no shortage of backhanded benevolence in terms of us being quote-unquote included in the history of art. The problem is that the inclusion in that history of art has been one that has been defined not by who we are, but by who we're perceived to be, or the function we serve in a sort of either appendage or enhancing way to the history of art. And what comes to mind immediately, Andre, is the Fred Wilson's brilliant show, I think it was in I want to say 2000, it might have been earlier, called Mining the Museum. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
I'm not.
But Fred Wilson is a wonderful conceptual artist, you know, along that line of lineage are fantastic artists like Glenn Ligon and Sonia Clark. So Fred did this fantastic experiment and was funded at the University of Baltimore in Maryland, where he went into their archives and he carefully and painstakingly looked through all the imagery, narrative imagery that they had, and he found folk of color in the grand paintings, whether it was a scene of the manger, the sacred birth, or some Renaissance scene or some feast scene. And then he realized that there were black folk all through them.
Yes.
But they were painted into the background. So he covered the entire painting and left rectangular or diamond shapes and only left the faces of the blacks that were in them but never seen.
Wow.
And it was specific because the main characters were always done in full color. And the characters of color that were supporting, carrying things next to the dogs, behind the stable, whatever, were painted in muted sepia tones.
Right.
So Fred cleverly covered the rest of the painting, left only the people of color, presented that, and it was called Mining the Museum. And he was mining the history of art because it's not fair to say we were left out. What's fair to say is that we were defined in ways that had nothing to do with us.
Right.
It was always a supporting cast.
Right.
And never important. So what happened by extension is that people went to art museums and saw folk of color, but saw us in the context of what the modern Western world
define
continues
us.
To see and define right. us, which is, you know, supporting something greater than us, not being worthy of, less than, not fitting the ideals of the Greco-European classical system. It's interesting because the show's here at the same time as a Rodin, the master sculptor. No one can argue that, a French painter. But there's a lovely bridge between our show about African Americans stating and speaking to their own identity and their own experience at the same time that the institution has this major show of arguably one of the greatest sculptors of all time. And the bridge is this. Most of these African Americans had to leave America to go to France, where people like Rodin accepted them as American artists. Back here, they were just Negro artists and no one cared.
Right.
In fact, it was derisive. So it's funny because now, if any of your listeners come, not if, please come, and they see a Richmond Barthé sculpture of Jesus as just in the corner, come unto me, you'll see the same kind of neo-realist neorealist form that Rodin made popular. It's because these individuals were now allowed to take what was then the modern trends in art and apply them to the themes that were important to us, like spirituality. You know, so there's a beautiful thing here that's not promoted much, and I'd love that people to come and see that, and that is that African Americans from the beginning of the 20th century till now, it was a necessary thing to take a pilgrimage outside of America so that you could be seen as an American artist and not a Negro artist.
It's funny you should mention that. I just happened to go see Ta-Nehisi Coates speak
recently. Brilliant.
And he talked about, hey, I had to go to Paris.
There you go.
To be able to walk with my children, not worry about who would be noticing them, who would
Indeed.
Be addressing them. So I
Indeed.
Think it's still, obviously, no matter how far we've come, that is still the paradigm of living in America.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got some themes.
Yes.
And can you explain what drew you to categorize and to create these themes so that the work you're looking at can be, is it more accessible through the themes? Is it something that can connect to people? But abstraction, gender, what were all the themes and what brought that onto the process?
You're spot on, Andre. It's we knew that we were speaking to, as I said before, our objective in concert and partnership with the museum was to not just invite people in to see some beautiful images of African Americans. This was not about political correctness. This is about presenting people with corrective imagery that leans against the tidal wave of negative images of black people in this country. I mean, things have changed, and we are a great nation, but we're not the only nation. And we have issues that are endemic to our history that we can't escape. So I think that one of the things that I worked with my primary consultant and wonderful friend, Louis Tanner Moore, who is the great nephew of the greatest painter of the 20th century, African-American painter, which was Henry Osawa Tanner. Louis and I sat down and we really planned this exhibition and thought, how do we make it so that individuals who come in here may be a little bit apprehensive because they've never had programs targeted for them. They come into what I call the cathedral of high art, the hushed tones, and the assumptions that you know art history, that you've studied and you've gone to school, when the reality is folk have just been working to try to get by and make it happen in, like everywhere else. So we didn't want to have them walk into a space where we've done something to celebrate our history, our culture, and our Americanness, and feel, well, I haven't had art history, so I'm not sure what I'm looking at, and then I don't want to ask somebody to give me permission to understand what I'm looking at. So what we did is we divided it into these six themes: abstraction, community, faces, spirit, and the land. And if you'll, you know, indulge me, and we're looking at the panels here on the wall, and we color-coded them. We color-coded them because it's called constructing identity. And African-American identity is a constructed identity.
Yes, it is.
There are no other African-Americans around the world. As I'm sure those of us who have traveled knows, you go abroad and you bring with you this sort of, you know, the noisy tin cans of who you think you are in America, and the rest of the world doesn't care about that.
Right.
The rest of the world says, you're American, and you're part of American music, and they're talking about jazz and hip-hop. And it's a cold and strange awakening when you realize, wait a minute, I drank the Kool-Aid. You know, I think what America thinks of me. And so we wanted to put these themes in so that any individual will come to the museum, will feel welcomed, will understand that to an artist, a collector, scholars of the highest order sat down and said, we want to put a hand out to our community. You know, we're not interested in hashing over the past of the institution. As I said, this is not an act of contrition or mea culpa more than it is, I think, a grand gesture from Pam to say, look, y'all, we just haven't been doing our job here. And Brian has said, the director, Brian Friso, said that openly and honestly several times. And so he asked us to come in. So the themes now, for example, the land, right? So we're standing here, we're looking to a brilliant painting by Alan Freelon called View from Gloucester Street, right here. So it's an impressionist painting. Alan is as good as anyone else. And here, and basically, that's under the land. There's a yellow tag. And it says here on the board, just reading the initial sentences, the land encompasses both nature and home for the African American. It offers a sense of place that is essential to defining oneself. If you think about freedom and you think about the end of slavery, what is the first statement that comes out of that? 20 acres and a mule. Land, right? But as people, we're tasked to work the land, but we rarely were able to own it. So African Americans have maintained a special relationship with the land, right? And the land is a central place in African-American art, and these works related to this theme describe the sins as well as the salvation of our presence in America. So rather than label it in a normal contextual way and say, these are African-American landscapes, which puts it in the canon of fine landscape painting, which again then makes the person go, well, I don't know anything about landscape painting. Maybe I shouldn't look at this. Maybe this show makes me feel uncomfortable. By putting these themes and drafting these texts and these blurbs, we want all the people in all the community to come in and say, oh, I see what this is about. This is about how we understand ourselves to the land. That the land was our sin because we had to work it, but the land was our salvation because if you could own it, you could own your freedom.
Right.
You see, so we're not trying to whitewash anything, nor are we trying to get involved in, like, you know, crazy hyperbole, like, this is the greatest, this is whatever. We're trying to anchor it in the fact, and we chose the works that anchors that in the fact about the spaces, as it says here, where our faces and our patterns of life came from.
One of the things that I noticed about this is that whenever I look at a collection like this, it reminds me of a symphony. It reminds me of a piece of music. We have a variety of different instruments that are playing in harmony and, and developing chords and threads. Mm-hmm. And the beauty of this, the way you've worked with these themes, is that it allows me to pick out instruments.
Right.
So the faces, that's one instrument.
Right.
And if it's
so you could walk in here and say, I'm not, it's all pretty,
right,
but I'm going to spend my first half hour, I'm just looking at how, about faces.
Right.
And if you read that, and I won't go through the whole thing for your listeners, but, you know, this is the important thing when we were wordsmithing this, you know? And we said here, The Faces theme is presented not so much to compare or contrast, quote, our beauty, unquote, with their beauty, but to present the characteristics and defining elements of our faces. So it's sort of like, you know, Dead Prez, a hip-hop band.
Right.
When they said, you know, I'm an African, and they say, no, we got big lips, big nose, big bucks dancing.
Right.
You know, that's who we are.
Yes.
Now, sometimes we're afraid of those kinds of references because American culture has taken them and formed them into a very hard rock and thrown them at us and hurt us.
Repeatedly.
Right, repeatedly. But there is something about that that is true that we must own and embrace because, as I said earlier to the talk to the docents this morning, the thing about stereotypes, and this is not mine, I'm paraphrasing, is that it's not that stereotypes are untrue, it's that they're only partially true.
Right.
Right? So yeah, we have broad nose, big lips, big butts, dance and all that, but that's part of who we are, not
right.
all of who we are.
Right.
When you say it's all of who we are, that's when a characteristic becomes a sharpened object that causes pain and trauma.
And I love the way you put that because looking at this collection in its entirety, you do get to see all of those facets. You get
True.
To see all of those themes. And it's incredible to think that not just the time involved, but the level of self-education, the level of practice, the level of self-exploration that each of these artists came to on their own path.
Amen.
I mean, it's one thing to think of a collection of Picasso mm-hmm. or a collection where, you know, this is one person who dedicated his life, but we're seeing thousands upon thousands of hours and time.
Excuse me, yes, indeed. And that was one of the things. This is only half of the collection, by the way. And we're just getting started. And even this past year, we spent a significant amount of resources, you know, for acquiring additional and potent work specifically out of love for the Portland community and this institution. We were not going to put together an exhibition for this institution, which has a venerable spot in this culture. I believe it's the oldest museum in the Northwest, right? Isn't the... It is, yes, and the East and North, right. And so, you know where the museum stands, and we know what issues there are in terms of racial struggle, strife, the endemic racism that's not obvious, but we also know that Portland is working really hard to move, not past that, but with that, into a better space. And so the last thing we were going to do is come in here with a show called Constructing Identity about African Americans and who we are at this incredibly sensitive, bizarro, inverted political time and make it a weak show. So I went to my client, Jim, who is very much invested in this and said, you know what? We need to spend enough resources so that when the Portland community of color, and not just the Portland community of color, but also the dedicated members of this institution, from the trustees down to all of the lifelong members, when they come in here, they have to not see us compared to Rodin,
right.
and not see us compared to some other Black history show they've seen. They should come in here and be overwhelmed with beauty. They should come in here and see these placards that we spent on average, I kid you not, Lewis Tanner Moore and I spent on average for every one of the placards for every one of these shows, for every one of these images in the show, 15 to 20 minutes, sometimes longer.
Wow.
Hashing out every word.
Right.
Now, he's a collector of the highest order. I am an art educator. I'm not an art historian. I'm a painter. I love to paint. I love to make art, whatever. But fundamentally, what we had to do was put up my passion. Thank you. Thank you. Put up my passion, I just want to see if you can cut that. My passion against his experience. And here's where it could have gone easily. I could have deferred to him and said, yo, Lewis, man, you know, you're the great nephew of Fanny Rosawa Tanner. You've got a fantastic collection. You give to museums. You've written essays. You've got all over YouTube. I defer to you. No. No. We sat in his home outside Philly and we had fights, man. I mean, word for word. You can't say that. This is not what we want the people to understand. I mean, I really want your listeners to understand that, yes, we want them to come here, but they should understand that this was not some afterthought.
Right.
That two brothers who care deeply about this fought each other to the point of fighting to make sure that what we put on the wall was accessible to the woman who works at an institution and mops up on the weekend. The young man who's got a young job at an institution and is married and is looking for some cultural nourishment. We wanted every one of those people to be able to come up to each one of these placards, like you said, choose faces, choose a theme, read that, walk around, be left alone, not be followed, and construct your own sense of what you did not understand about the theme of faces or the theme of spirit. And underneath spirit are themes like music. You
right.
said that. So, you know, where do we put music? It's spirit, because that's the elevation. That's the, you know, music is temporal. You know, it lives in your head. If I do the first few bars of Kinds of Blue, Kind of Blue, you know where it's going. We all own that.
Right.
So we wanted people to walk around here, and you said, absolutely right. They start looking at music and the spirit. They start seeing not only pictures of baptism and music and ritual, and they begin to see that this is who we are.
Right, right. It's an amazing collection. Right now, where I happen to be standing in front of Richard Mayhew, called Summation, and it is just an amazing painting that evokes in me a feeling of a savanna at the break of day or early evening. The colors are rich. They're
unapologetically bright.
Without a doubt.
Right. So, and that's another thing. I'm sorry to interrupt, but you know, a lot of times we join these themes, these segments, these, the word escapes me now, but these, the sort of academic, the canons of landscape.
Yes.
And when we do them as people of color, one of the pejoratives is, you know, you're a good landscape painter, but I don't know if we can show that because it's so colorful. We know what that means.
Yes, we do.
We know the code. We know the dog whistle. So here you have Richard Mayhew, who is African-American, Native American, lives out in the Midwest, and he paints these images, and there are no studies. The richness and the passion from his soul of what the land means to him, and the power of the beauty of the land, the undiluted power that is common in our culture, you know, we don't tamper things down, we ramp it up.
Right.
And so here you look at this, and that's why, again, it's not about landscape. I don't want anybody looking at this and going to the side of the museum and looking at traditional European landscapes and going, you know, and especially someone who's of European descent and going, it's lovely, but it doesn't belong to this canon. No, it belongs to the human canon.
Exactly.
And it belongs to the human canon of the African American. And the African American is not a black person. It is the same as if, and I encourage our, you know, listeners, I shout out to them and say, you know, think of this for a moment. Everybody thinks of Europe and you think of different countries. Everybody thinks of Africa, they think of one color. And mistakenly, they think of it as a country.
As a country.
And then they forget that it's 2.5 to 2 2/3 the size of continental America. You can literally take up America and put it in the Sahara Desert and have
some
room.
Leftover.
And then switch it and have some room and then get to South Africa. You know, it's huge, right? And so if you think of, you know, Africa, pre-colonial slavery Africa, yes, there was slavery there, but it tended to be indentured slavery. You could be sold, you could buy your way out, whatever. It wasn't the reduction of your life to the equivalent of an animal or less.
Or
commodity. So what happened was, you know, what we have here now is the ability for African Americans to start to think of themselves outside of those restrictive, that restrictive naming. In academia, they call it nomenclature, the naming of things. So if we think of ourselves in our history only as black, happy in Africa, bunch of ships showed up, took us, brutalized us, we came out of that, we moved north, Harlem Renaissance, civil rights, Barack Obama. It's like, wait a minute, you know, much richer than that. And so I really want people to come in here and understand that when they look at these things, what you're dealing with are impulses that survive genetically.
Yes.
We brought who we are to this country as memory, and we designed who we are in the absence of a humanity that was owed to us. And despite that, we shine. And despite that, we rise. And despite that, we insist on defining ourselves in a way that is truthful, that does not depend on the voice of anybody else. And like any other culture, when you subjugate us, we find syncretic ways. And just, you know, syncretism is the ability to have someone dominate you and run your hustle right under them.
right,
right under their society. So when you go to the supermarket and you see these candles for, you know, for worship with the saints and the candomblé things, you know, there were six times as many Africans in Brazil as America. So they took the Catholic faith and took all the saints and twisted it to be the Yoruba deities we used to worship. So we always find a way for our humanity to rise.
Right.
And I want people to come in here and look around quietly, privately, with their children. Please, mothers and sisters and aunts and grandmothers, bring the young children in. I don't know one major African-American artist who's at the top of their game right now who, when asked, the answer isn't almost every time. It started with my mother or my aunt or my grandmother bringing me to the museum or bringing me to a program at the museum every Saturday.
Right. In closing, I just want to make sure that I share a very profound realization that I'm feeling right now, is that this is an exhibit that embraces and accentuates the African-American gaze. You know, right now we're talking about white gaze and how we are perceived, we are seen, we are judged, we are measured by the dominant culture here in America. And this is an exhibit that, you know, in an amazing way, flips the scripts,
yep,
turns the mirror around, and allows us to see ourselves through our gaze.
Right.
It's an amazing journey. It's an amazing path. It's an amazing lens that I have to say I've never been able to feel in this measure.
At this level of an institution.
Yes. I've done the black films. I saw Moonlight earlier this year.
Sure.
I grew up watching Spike
Lee.
Saw
Fences last night, nearly died crying.
And so many of those pieces of work are still filtered through a white gaze because it's white money that pays for those large-scale productions. Mm-hmm. The record labels are owned by white people. But an artist who is making a painting, taking a photograph, that is completely within their domain, completely within their license. And this body of work exemplifies that one-on-one relationship with someone and their creativity and through their lens.
Amen. And don't run away. In closing, don't run away from your African-American identity. What I'm asking you to do, and all your listeners to do to this wonderful program, is to remember that to be African-American is the equivalence of jazz, of bebop, of hip-hop. The world looks to our culture as the defining force of culture, because throughout the history of the world, art defines culture.
Yes.
Okay? You belong to that tribe because your loincloth looked that way. You belong to that culture in Europe because your spoons are longer and rounder. We don't call it art. There was no word for art in pre-colonial Africa, right? So what we did, art was ritual, it was life. And what people don't learn, because it's been omitted from the books and the history and the conversation, because we're so busy in a binary system of hatred, that we don't even think back and realize, you know, that basically in American culture, wherever we could, we seeded ourselves, S-E-E-D-E-D, we seeded ourselves. We are the equivalent, I said to the docent today, if you look at this art, it's a way of saying, we were here. So we're looking now in this room where we have a Micheline Thomas, who is a Portland native and is now at the top of the game, top 1% of the artists in the country. She is it. And she was a young woman here in Portland studying graphic design and pre-law. And she came to the Portland Museum of Art a few years back and saw a Carrie Mae Weems show and literally blew her skull off. She did not know that women of color, A, did art of that caliber deserving of this institution's attention, but also B, that art was honest, truthful, unvarnished, diluted. And she walked in here and it changed her life. And she packed up, moved to Brooklyn, met Carrie Mae Weems, got further inspired, and now we have this beautiful piece, Landscape Majestic, which you can see evidence of her early days as a graphic designer.
Yes.
And now she's gone back to doing her more representative pieces. When you Google Micheline, M-I-K-A-L-E-N-E Thomas, she's now going back and doing these retro 70s images of black women in paneled rooms. They're her mother, they're his sisters, there's very few men in there. This ability to take that experience as an African-American, see an African-American woman do something at the Portland Art Museum, and then build one of the biggest careers in the art world now, and still stay true to the theme that A woman's work inspired me. A woman's work and the woman's place in the African-American community is one of power, and I can move forward. Question necessary for Portland going forward to consider itself as a significant and major hub of African-American art. So we're not here to yell at people. We're not about white guilt. We're not here to look down at our community. We're begging them to come. We're pleading with them to come in, and we're not telling them what to think, because that's pandering and patronizing, right? So we designed the entire show, and the museum has been absolutely fantastic about giving us that latitude, so that one person, if we leave today and the gallery was slow Tuesday and somebody walked in here, they don't have to be bothered. And they can leave here with an elevated sense of pride in what it means to be an American of African descent who belongs to this narrative.
Audience, I can't but give a hearty thank you, a sincere thank you, and thank you to Mr. Beresford Booth, Professor of Art at Lehigh University. Thank you so much for this tour, for sharing a little bit of your process, and inviting our community to come down here.
My client, Jim Petrucci, and the Petrucci Family Foundation, I've known him for a long time. He called me up. This came out of nowhere. I did not expect that this would happen. It's here. And I cannot tell you and your community how rich this has made my life, which is already rich as an artist, to have the charge to not only collect, but to conserve, and most important, to present this work to all communities, not just communities of color, but all communities, so that we begin to correct the notions of ourselves as caricatures, and we begin to see ourselves and be proud of ourselves as full Americans who belong to the narrative of America.
Thank you, sir.
You so much, man.
My pleasure. My pleasure.
I'd like to give a big thank you to Open Signal Portland Community Media Center for their technical